Welcome to Kingdom Life Radio. This is Kenny Hebert, and today we will be in the last program on the series, The Kingdom of God. We've been in this now for a few weeks, and this is part 8. And today we are going to be in Matthew chapter 24 through 25. Yep, that's right. Two chapters in Matthew. It's where Jesus gives this lengthy discussion in response to some questions about when will the end come, and what will be the sign of your coming in the end of this age. And so the disciples are come to Jesus asking the question a lot of people ask even today. Well, when will the end come? When will a kingdom finally come? Now, of course, as we go through this, we're not going to be able to touch on everything that's in Matthew 24 and 25. We're not going to be able to read it all and touch on it all in one, every aspect of in one setting, everything that Jesus says here. But I encourage you to reread those two chapters, Matthew 24 and 25, as one long conversation by Jesus. And making sure to not take it out of any of it out of the context of Jesus answering the disciples' questions that they ask him in verse 3 of chapter 24. A lot of people take the different parts, the different parables out and take it out of the context of Jesus is answering, saying those parables specifically in answer to the question disciples ask him in Matthew 24, verse 3. So make sure that you see it within the context, that one long conversation, Jesus answers them. Now we're going to start with Matthew chapter 24, verse 1 through 3. We're not going to be reading all the verses, but here and there, and I'll reference some other ones. And verses 1 through 3 of Matthew 24 reads, well, which is, it's just about after, it just comes right after verse in chapter 23, where Jesus, where the disciples actually had just heard Jesus denounce the nation of Israel and said that it would be left completely desolate. Now just imagine what the disciples are thinking at that moment when they hear Jesus pronouncing this judgment that's going to be coming on Israel and that they would be left desolate. And they're expecting and hoping that shortly Jesus is going to become the king and establish Israel and them in power. And they hear Jesus say, their nation will be left desolate. Okay, that's verse chapter 23, verse 37 through 39. Now we're going to pick up Matthew 24 through verse 30. Matthew 24, verse 1 through 3. And it says, it reads, Jesus left the temple and was going away when his disciples came to point out to him the buildings of the temple. Remember, they just heard him saying, Jesus says that Israel will be left desolate and be judged, right? And so they're coming now to him, and they point out the buildings to him, the temple buildings. But he answers to them, you see all these, do you not? Truly, I say to you, there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down. And as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, tell us, when will these things be? What will be the sign of your coming in the end of the age? And here, they ask the same question people have asked for all generations. When's the end going to come? When will you finally come, Jesus? When's going to be the end of this age? Because they expected both to happen at the same time. The end of this age would happen, and the coming of the King Messiah would come at the same time. So so they're expecting it. And that word, you know, when will be the sign of your coming, really it was a word that came to signify the second coming of the Lord. And it was used of what that word was used for was really a picture of a king who would visit a country, and that coming would include that king having a permanent presence from that point forward. So that's what the idea of, you know, when will be the sign of your coming. That's the early church expectation. It would include Jesus coming to be their king forever. The disciples have just heard the news about the nation being left desolate, and they're admiring their temple building, and they point out the buildings of the temple area to Jesus as if they're trying to impress him. But Jesus answers, not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down. Desolation will hit it. Jerusalem will also destroy the temple. At the time, the disciples are probably thinking, if Jerusalem and the temple are destroyed, how would there be a nation for Messiah to rule? Right? That's what they're expecting. What God is doing is not dependent, nor is it going to be confined to a physical building or to just one nation. See, Jesus' response prompts the disciples to come to Jesus and ask him, when will these things be? And what will be the sign of your coming? You mean the king, his kingdom coming, and the end of this age. Matthew, now when he's hearing it, he doesn't understand what Jesus is really saying at that moment. But now here, 30 years later, he's writing this. And he understands the importance of Jesus' response. And he's recording it here in Matthew 24 and 25 for following generations like us. Of Jesus that want to follow Jesus. It's written for us. So what Matthew writes here is actually would end up helping the disciples that dwell in Jerusalem to know when to flee Jerusalem just prior to the destruction in 70 AD. So even Matthew's instruction directly impacted that generation of Christians that were there in Jerusalem in 70 AD to save their lives. And just as Jesus prophesied, Jerusalem was left desolate in that siege against Jerusalem. Jesus' response to the questions here in Matthew, to the questions that the disciples ask in Matthew 24:3, are here in Matthew 24-25, and they give us the sense, one of the first things you realize reading it, is that Jesus is letting them and letting us know there was going to be a substantial delay before the end of the age happened, and he would return. Now remember, the disciples thinking Jesus is going to establish his kingdom soon. But Jesus, in this response, is telling them and letting us know it's not going to be soon. There's going to be a substantial, significant delay before the end of this age comes and that he returns. Let's read Matthew 24, 4 through 14, and then verse 24, and I'll share some more thoughts with you. Jesus answered them, "See that no one leads you astray, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and they will lead many astray. And you will hear wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not alarmed, for this must take place. But the end is not yet. For nations will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are but the beginning of the birth pains. They will deliver you up to tribulation and put you to death, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another. And many false prophets will arise and lead many astray. And because lawlessness will be increased, the love of many will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom, this good news of the kingdom, will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come." And that's verse 14 of verse 24 of Matthew 24. "For false prophets and false Christs will arise and perform great signs and wonders so as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect." Now, from what I just read from Matthew 24, 4 through 14 and verse 24, and if you go on through verse 25 through 35, Jesus lists these different events and circumstances, whether they're wars or rumors of wars, nations against nations, famines, earthquakes, tribulation, falling away, betrayals, hatred, lawlessness, persecution, false prophets and false messiah, the love will grow cold, and there's others. Remember, part of this is for us to understand, in this evil age is going to continue until the end of this age and Jesus returns. So we live in an evil age. Now, Jesus gives us a picture of crisis and chaos that will go on during the delay until the end of this age comes. Between his leaving and resurrection and ascension until he comes again, a second coming, he's saying there's going to be a delay. During that time, there is going to be all kinds of chaos and crisis happening. And in the midst of it, in verse 6, he says, don't be alarmed. Don't be alarmed. These things must take place. They're going to happen. And Jesus warns them and us three different times. Verse 4, verse 11, and verse 24. He warns them and us against being led astray. He's saying, don't get caught up in this idea that, you know, somehow there's not going to be crisis and chaos. Says, don't be alarmed. It's an evil age. He tells them to beware of false messiahs and false prophets with a false message of hope that deceives and leads astray during the crisis and chaos that happens, that's going to happen during this delay. See, what happens in times of national crisis and chaos is when people are going to be looking for a savior from the crisis and chaos, and it's when people and institutions look to set themselves up as leaders, as saviors for the moment. See, there's nothing new under the sun. It happened during Jesus' time, before Jesus' time. It's happened since then. It happens right now. And see, at times of national crisis and chaos, there are also those who will rebel and work against the current leaders, using a false message and offering false answers and false hope, looking to become the new savior for the moment. Sound familiar? It happens all the time. See, they are all just man-initiated and man-entered saviors. They do not have the answer. They do not have the message. They're not the king. Jesus is. So not only will the crisis and chaos continue during the delay, but so will the pursuit and the battle and the fight to have power over people. It's going to be masked as being a savior from the crisis and the chaos. This reminds me of some of the political wranglings happening, whether it's on a Democrat or Republican side, doesn't matter. All of them are vying for powers or masking themselves as saviors for the moment. And they don't have the answers. Jesus has the answers. So don't be led astray after them and give your energy and passion and time to something that is the wrong battle. They are just diversions from the real eternal mission that must take place during the delay. The proclaiming of the kingdom, the gospel of the kingdom that's supposed to happen until he returns. I'm going to read verse 14 from chapter 24 again. This is Jesus, part of his instruction about first. He's like, you know, don't be surprised by this. Don't be taken, fooled or deceived. He said, beware of that. And in the meantime, and this gospel will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations. Then the end will come, right? Then the end will come. See, Jesus came proclaiming that message of the kingdom, handed it over to the church. We're called to continue with that same message until the very end, we're called to proclaim. And then the end will come when it goes to every nation. In verse 6, Jesus says, do not be alarmed, this must take place, but the end is not yet. The end is not yet. But the end is not yet. Do not be led astray by the false conclusion that can sometimes be made, that crisis and chaos that is happening means that the end is imminent, and we make it all about calculating the date or the timing. So that's one of the things we get into, like wanting to know when. And so we start seeing crisis and chaos happening around us, and then the focus and energy and passion is given over trying to figure out when that's coming. We cannot get led astray by false conclusions. They're just as bad as false messiahs and false prophets. See, we're called to endure to the end, verse 13 says, and to do one other thing, to be faithful to proclaim the gospel of the kingdom to all nations during the crisis and chaos of the delay until the end comes. That's our responsibility. And we're not supposed to go astray after false messiahs, false prophets, or false conclusions made by the crisis and chaos. Now in Matthew chapter 24, verse 3, we read the disciples asked Jesus about a sign to know when there would be his coming and the end of this age. In Matthew 24, 14, it reads, and this is Jesus' part of Jesus' response to that question. Remember, the whole of chapters 24 and 25 are a response to the questions in verse 3. So do not take them out of that context. Read them, understand that Jesus is responding to a specific question. And here he responds in verse 14. And this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. Here's a sign. Jesus tells them and us, there is one thing that must take place before the end comes. The gospel, the good news of the kingdom, the good news that God has come to reign. that he has conquered death, right? Jesus has conquered death. The gospel of the kingdom has come. The gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, to all ethnic groups, and then the end will come. See, the end won't come until the gospel of the kingdom is proclaimed throughout all the whole world. Not the gospel of the gospel of salvation, not the gospel of redemption. Those are all part of it, but it's even a bigger picture. The gospel of the kingdom. Jesus came to take back the rule of this earth, this evil age, that was usurped from Adam, the first Adam, and Jesus, the last Adam, has come to take back rule of this age and this world, this creation. And not until the gospel of the kingdom is proclaimed through all the whole world, to all ethnic groups, then the end will come. We must not be led astray from that task that's been entrusted to us, sharing the gospel of the kingdom in words and works, just like Jesus. He spoke the words of the kingdom and he did the works of the kingdom. And throughout this evil age, even though it looks like all this stuff, chaos and crisis are happening, it does not mean we're fighting a losing battle. Actually, we have been entrusted with the gospel of the kingdom. And we're called to proclaim that because Jesus came, that kingdom came and entered this evil age and defeated Satan. Jesus did that. Now the church, us, believers, followers of Christ, are to continue to proclaim the kingdom in words and works until Jesus comes, so the rest of the world may see and know that Jesus is Messiah and King. Matthew 24, verse 24 through 27, and verse 30, we're going to read here. And it says, "For false Christs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders, so as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you beforehand. So if they say to you, 'Look, he is in the wilderness,' do not go out. If they say, 'Look, he's in the inner rooms,' do not believe. For as lightning comes from the east and shines as far as the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then will appear in heaven the sign of the Son of Man, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory." Remember, the disciples are looking for a sign, and Jesus is warning them and us to beware and do not be led astray by false Christs, false prophets, false conclusions. But these false Christs and false prophets that are performing great signs, don't be led astray by that. Beware of their claims that Jesus himself has returned and is in the desert or in an inner room, like Jesus has secretly returned for just a small group of insiders. Beware of that cultish thinking, that cultish talking, those cultish groups. We may not know when he will return, but when he does come, it will be public, not secret. It will be unquestionable and will not be confined to just a small group of elite followers. In fact, it will be so obvious as a flash of lightning that lights up the entire skyline from east to west for all to see, like a big banner that just unfurls across the sky, for all to see and know that Jesus and the end have come. That is your sign. That's what Jesus is telling them. Now let's jump to Matthew 24, verse 36 through 44. I'll read that too here. "But concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. For as were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day when Noah entered the ark. And they were unaware until the flood came and swept them all away, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two men will be in the field, one will be taken and one left. Two men will be grinding at the mill, and one will be taken and one left. Therefore stay awake, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect." No one knows the day or hour, not even Jesus. Jesus is saying that there are going to be people who will be caught up unprepared at his coming, just like the days of Noah. They were consumed with the cares of this life, and they were caught unaware until the flood came. At Jesus' coming, there will only be two groups of people, the prepared, who are the saved, and the unprepared, who are lost. Thus the warning here in verse 44, therefore you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Trying to figure out the day is not what is going to make you ready or prepared. You have to stay awake and keep watch, Jesus says in verse 42. Jesus is not saying we have to live a life of always and constant alert, trying to maintain our salvation by how ready we are. Jesus explains what he means by watchfulness and readiness as he continues teaching in Matthew 24, verse 45 through Matthew 25 through 46. And let's look at some of this here. And this will read Matthew 24, 45 to 51. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom his master has set over his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. But if that wicked servant says to himself, my master is delayed, and he begins to beat his fellow servants and eat and drinks with drunkards, the master of that servant will come on the day when he does not expect him, and in an hour he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and put him with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Remember, this is part of the answer to their question. When will the end come, and is there a sign? Tell us a sign. And Jesus is telling them this parable to teach them something about delay. Here in Matthew 24 through 45 through 51, being watchful and ready does not mean that the master expects to find his servant passively waiting and watching at the door for when he returns. No, he expects to find the servant faithfully fulfilling his responsibility that was entrusted to him. See, watchfulness and readiness for the coming of Jesus is not found in some passive speculation of his return, but in faithful stewardship of what he has entrusted to us. That's from the NIV commentary. And since there is no concern that I will miss Christ's return, I can devote my life to faithfully fulfilling what he entrusted to me. So Matthew 25, verse 1 through 13 is another parable. It's this parable of the 10 virgins that complements His Jesus' earlier teaching in Matthew 20, verse 24, verse 36 through 44. And it stresses that there's the same thing, the need for preparedness and readiness. Now remember, this parable is also be understood in the context of the questions the disciples asked Jesus in Matthew 24, verse 3, not out of any other context, that response Jesus is making. Now there's 10 virgins in this parable, 5 wise, 5 foolish, who are waiting for the bridegroom to come, and they fell asleep. Remember, this is not about constantly being alert. Remember that, so sleep is okay. See, at midnight, the bridegroom shows up, and the virgins go to light their lamps, and the lamps of the foolish virgins quickly go out because they have no oil. There's a distinction maybe between the two groups, because the wise do not just bring oil in their lamps, but an extra supply in separate jars, and the foolish virgins either bring no extra oil or no oil at all. The point here is that the wise are prepared for the delay. The foolish expect to meet the groom, but were unprepared for the delay of the groom coming. The foolish virgins now want the wise virgins who still have oil to help them, but the wise virgins cannot help them. Some think this is terrible because the wise had extra oil they could give, but the point of the parable is not about the oil, but about being prepared. We're trying to be understanding a parable in a way it's not intended. See, the wisdom and preparedness of the wise virgins cannot benefit the foolish virgins when the crisis and the chaos come suddenly upon them. See, it's not about oil. It's about being prepared and being wise. See, wisdom and preparedness cannot be transferred from one person to the other. Each person is responsible for themselves, and that responsibility continue to the very end of one's life. Now, Matthew 24, 14 through 30 is the parable of the talents. It is similar to the earlier parable of the two kinds of servants. in Matthew 24, verse 45 through 51. Where a master goes away for extended time and leaves his servants with responsibility to fulfill. As the master of the house leaves on his journey, he entrusts different amounts of talents to each servant. Each amount is of great value. One talent was probably worth about 20 years' wages of a day laborer. Each servant was given an amount according to the master's evaluation of that servant's ability. The first two servants went to work without delay. But the last servant, unwilling to work or take a risk, merely dug a hole and buried the money. Now the first two were recognized their stewardship. They understood that, and they had a responsibility, and they improved what the master gave them. And upon the master's return, they received a commendation. Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. The last servant did not recognize his master's intention, nor his responsibility to his master and his obligation to discharge his assigned duties. And he opted for safety instead of service. See, he was hoping to avoid doing anything wrong, so he chose not to do anything right. That's a quote from the NIV commentary. He was hoping to avoid doing anything wrong, so he chose to not do anything right. The last servant comes forward to the master and he blames the master in an attempt to excuse his own failure. The master condemns the servant on the basis of the servant's own words. If the master really is so harsh and greedy, should not the servant at least have put the money where it would have been a relatively safe, earned interest, and required no work? See, the parable is about an expectation of watchfulness and preparedness or readiness for the master's return. But that readiness is not seen in passive waiting, but in performance of one's duty, in making the most of the talents entrusted to us, as well as expecting growth to what had been entrusted to them and us until the day of reckoning comes when Jesus returns and the end of this age happens. Jesus is telling us that being watchful, being ready, and being prepared for the end of the age and his return are seen in using what he has entrusted to us responsibly, not just passively watching nor in burying what God entrusted to us. Each person is responsible for themselves, and that responsibility continues to the end of one's age. And there's going to be delay before Jesus returns. They have to understand that. We need to understand it too. We do not know the day or the hour when that will happen, but we need to be alert, not be led astray, to be unprepared, but we should be awake, not to be passively spectating or speculating about his return, but faithfully fulfilling the responsibility he has entrusted to us. And that is to carry out Matthew 24:14. This gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed to the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. And see, what he's entrusted to us and what we're called to be faithful to is to work together with the church, the local church, the local community believers that are then proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, that others may know that Jesus has come and he will come again to reign. Well, thank you for joining me today, and I want to encourage you, if you want to listen to this again or share with other people, you can go to my website at letyourkingdomcome.com. That's letyourkingdomcome.com. Listen to it again or share it with other people, and also subscribe to the podcast there. If you'd like to leave any comments, feel free to do so on the website also. Until next week, may God's blessing be upon you.